Welcome to our show, Thickly Settled, a radio program about civilization and citizenship. Thickly Settled, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love My Neighbor. I'm Dave Goodman, a resident of Boston and a frequent rider on the T. During this program, we'll examine the rules, those human and cultural bylaws, both written and unwritten, that keep us functioning as a society. Don't ever talk to strangers.
Don't cross the street without looking.
But do pay your taxes on time. Never pull on Superman's cape. And thou shalt not kill, just to name a few. Now, some of you may be thinking, these rules are broken every day. Well, we won't shy away from controversy on this program, and if we get something wrong, you'll be the first to hear.
We've been monitoring your radio broadcast for a good many years. That's how we learned your languages.
I'm sure you recognize from our broadcasts the evil forces that have produced the trouble in our world.
By the way, we've chosen the train as our sonic metaphor, as it connects disparate sections of the city, and the city to the suburbs. And because it's one of the few places where people can be in close proximity and yet simultaneously about as far from each other as possible. We all know people die. That's a rule of nature. But why does it seem as though our favorite characters pass to the other side just as we're preparing our end-of-the-year top-whatevers-of-the-year lists? During the past 2 months, just counting entertainment icons, we've lost film director Blake Edwards, actors Jill Clayburgh, Leslie Nielsen, and Steve Landsberg, football star and sportscaster Don Meredith, and from the world of music, James Moody and Don Van Vliet, a.k.a. Captain Beefheart. The left side of my brain says there's nothing cosmic in a bunch of celebrities kicking the can around the same time. But the right side says,
whoa there, big guy.
How about the fact that three of the most amazing musical talents,
John Lennon, Phil Oakes, and Frank Zappa, all would have celebrated 70th birthdays this quarter if they had lived to see 2010. On this episode of Thickly Settled, we take a personal look at the Grand Wazoo, Muffin Man, and Chic Your Booty himself, Mr. Frank Zappa.
Would you look in the camera and tell him with a straight face that you think the founding fathers had in mind the kind of garbage you sing and write when they drafted the Fifth Amendment? Do you really believe that, Mr. Zappa?
I don't think it applies. The founding fathers kept slaves, and take a look at what Benjamin Franklin used to do over at the Hellfire Club.
But you have repeatedly...
Not exactly
you
have a bunch of swell guys. I think they had some good things in mind. But we have a document, the letter of the law. Yeah. Let's use the letter of the law and interpret it.
Wait a minute. It is relevant because you have repeatedly, in opposing even ratings for rock music, you have repeatedly cited the Constitution and the First Amendment. Do you think the founding fathers really had the First Amendment, that they gave us the First Amendment to defend songs that glorify Satanism and incest and suicide? You believe
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
You really believe
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I believe it.
Well, you're an idiot then.
Mr. Tell you what, kiss my How do you
well,
like
take your teeth out. Take your teeth out and we'll talk to you.
Let's cool it off.
Come on, let's get this.
The year is 1986, term two of the Reagan Revolution, and musicians such as Frank Zappa have been testifying in Congress against warning labels on record albums. Those are vinyl LPs for listeners born after 1990. In the early 80s, the musical artist Prince released several albums which were wildly popular and included songs with sexually suggestive lyrics, including Head and Sister. The resulting culture war between Puritan and permissive philosophies continues to this day. For the record, the song Sister, which suggests incest, is very much open to the interpretation that the sister referred to in the song is just an older woman, and not the singer's actual blood relative. But zealots will be zealots and lump together artists who support free speech with those they think are advocating in favor of incest. On cable news networks Crossfire with Tom Braden, Robert Novak, and Washington Times columnist John Lofton, Zappa was grilled about his stand on pornography and obscenity.
I understand your position in the government. I understand you have an absolutist position on the First Amendment. A lot of people have an absolutist position. But I asked you a question and you ducked it. I want you to tell me if you think that the lyrics saying that incest is a good thing have any artistic value or are in good taste, or if you approve. You must have some standards of your own. I'm not talking about the government.
You asked me for an opinion. I don't enjoy that kind of material. I'm not here to sell records for Prince or anybody else.
But you defend it being sold, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, well, then you're part of the problem.
Don't you think it would be a good thing to say to some of these people to cool it?
No, it's not my job.
What is your job?
My job is to represent myself.
What is your job? You once wrote a song called "We're All in It for the Money."
It's not a song. It's the name of an album.
Is that right?
You ought to get out more.
Yeah, yeah. How much money you made peddling this stuff, Mr. Zappa?
Millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars, Mr. Lofton.
All right, look. It seems to me, Mr. Zappa, that you've got to ask these people, both of them are on you,
He's accusing me of doing something that is similar to what that is being argued about. My lyrics aren't in question here.
Really?
What? They're not.
What would you propose, Mr. Lofton, as the means of censorship?
Well, I said I agree with Mr. Zappa that the first line of defense and responsibility is the parents. But what I do not agree with is that the parents have to stand alone, and we are not entitled to call upon our government to help us in the fight against
What government censor is going to decide for you?
Are the Brain Police from the Mothers of Invention's first album, 1968's Freak Out. I think it's important to note that Zappa more than likely would have preferred that we not pay tribute to him as an individual. He often deflected attention away from himself and towards the issues and questions he raised, such as why do we as a culture hold so dearly to our social and political taboos? In 1993, months before he died of cancer, Zappa spoke with Today Show correspondent Jamie Gangel.
Now, I know you're going to say I'm one of these health police people, but...
Go ahead.
I can't help but sit here and you have cancer and you're smoking cigarettes. Ask, Didn't it discourage you at all?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't believe that all of the stories about the evil effects of tobacco are true. And I would say, to me, a cigarette is food. Tobacco is my favorite vegetable.
The dangerous kitchen. If it ain't one thing, it's another. In the middle of the night when you get home, the bread things are all dry and scratchy. The meat things where the cats ate through the paper. The canned things with the sharp little edges that can cut your fingers when you're not looking. The soft little things on the floor that you step on. They can all be dangerous. Sometimes the milk can hurt you.
The show I saw, my first show with Zappa, was actually at the Felt Forum, which was that little theater attached to Madison Square Garden. And it was Halloween with Uncle Frank. And apparently it was at least a year after he recorded the Live in New York album at the Palladium, which was downtown. I went back downtown also in high school, and probably at least once during college to see him at the Palladium, which, as I recall, was on 14th Street, Union Square, somewhere around there. But my first show was actually, I think, at the Phelps Forum with one of my high school pals, George.
Dave Nash, who now lives in Oregon, was my college roommate at the State University of New York in Stony Brook on Long Island. We both grew up in New York in the 1970s and especially love that period of Zappa's 35-year career in music. How does a 17 or 18-year-old get introduced to Frank Zappa in the first place? Did you hear him on the radio?
You know, no. Zappa never had any airplay. You know, even back then when you had progressive rock and, you know, long-form AOR, you know, formats and all, as you'll know, Zappa was always on the lunatic fringe, and it probably wasn't until a couple of decades later when he had anything that even approached popular music. He was just way too culturally unacceptable to be on the radio at that time. No, I think we just had a bunch of albums. We had some friends who listened to, you know, what would have been a very avant-garde rock at that point. But it was through my friend Steve Britt, who you probably recall, who was a good friend in high school, turned me on to Overnight Sensation and Apostrophe, and later Zoot Allures, all of which, you know, were in the late 70s time frame when I was in high school. And that's how I discovered Zappa. And wow, what a discovery it was.
That's about the same time that I was. Those are the albums that I first discovered as well. Zoot Allures, especially with the Torture Never Stops, is one of those songs that will, you know, never get played on commercial radio, but had a big influence on me. I'm not a musician. I'm not a musician like you. You play guitar, but it's just that song, and unfortunately, a song that can be played to this day and has, you know, it has current events value.
Flies all green and buzzing in his dungeon of despair. Prisoners grumble and piss their clothes, scratch their matted hair. A tiny light from a window hole 100 yards away is all they ever get to know about the regular life in the day. And it stinks so bad, the stone's been choking and dripping greenish drops. In the room where the giant fire puffer works and the torture never stops. The torture never stops.
You know, I was thinking about when you talk about political or cultural relevance today, I was reflecting about this before you called, and you know, I think when I first got introduced to Zappa, it's easy to get distracted and hooked by, you know, by all the sarcasm and social commentary and all that stuff that his songs were nominally about. But, you know, as I reflect on it a few decades later, I think that the social commentary was just a backdrop, and it was some, you know, some fabric that they could, you know, weave all the musical grooves into. It was almost an excuse to get these great musicians together and to do all the innovative stuff. Now, other people might feel differently, but I think while I started, you know, of course, learning all the crazy lyrics and all the backstories for all the songs, and of course all that was amplified when you saw him live, but the music, ultimately, for me, was the thing that left the longest and deepest impact.
Frank Zappa on guitar, playing the song Black Napkins during a show in Osaka, Japan. Recently, I asked friends to relate their own Zappa stories. Professor Mark Stern, chair of the history department at Bentley University in Waltham, Massachusetts, producer of WMBR's Radio with a View, and another friend from Stony Brook, shared this memory about a date gone bad, and then good.
In 1968, I was in Philadelphia with my folks visiting family friends, and as a courtesy, their daughter set me up on a blind date. Was that a disaster? And we all went off to a subterranean club, I think it was called The Cavern, for my very first rock concert. I was 16. There on stage was this utterly bizarre band playing wild, wild stuff. The date was a total disaster. They were all completely stoned beyond belief, and I was completely straight. But the music was a mind-blowing revelation. It was, of course, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. The next summer, after I bought my own stereo, I heard about a new release by that band called We're Only in It for the Money. I took my meager, and I mean meager, stash of bills and went off to EJ Corvettes, which stood for 8 Jewish Korean War Veterans, out on Route 22, which is like a death trap, and bought the album on sale, I think, for $2.99. I went home and listened to the album twice with my headphones on so as not to offend my parents, who hated rock and roll. I took the headphones off and went back to Corvettes and bought Freak Out and Absolutely Free. And at that moment, I owned a complete Frank Zappa collection. I saw him many times live. Not all were fun. He could be a seriously arrogant jerk on stage, sometimes if he didn't like a crowd. And there was lots to dislike about Stony Brook crowds. My wife and I last saw Frank live in Cleveland, where he was rocking the vote in 1988. Loved his work in Congress, and his music is still a must hear. Not everything Zappa said or wrote was reasonable or worthy of his talents. His AIDS song is an absolute abomination. I think his song about Jesse Jackson sucks. And there was more than a little misogyny in this man. But he never said he was a god, just a genius. And that he was. I miss his wit, wisdom, weirdness, and genuine genius still.
I'm about to get sick from watching my TV. Been checking out the news till my eyeballs fail to see. I mean to say that every day is just another rotten mess, sure enough. And when it's gonna change, my friend, is anybody's guess. So I'm watching and I'm waiting, I'm hoping for the best. Even think I'll go to prayer every time I hear them say, yeah, yeah. There's no way to delay that trouble.
I've always gotten the impression that he cared a lot about society, about our culture. I was I was looking on YouTube at this interview that he did with CNN's Crossfire from 1986, where they're talking about the power of words, and Zappa gets really worked up because these guys in suits, and Zappa was wearing a suit also, they're challenging him because he dares question the conventional wisdom of our culture, which is you don't use dirty words, and you can see how much Frank Zappa, you know, cares. It's also interesting for me on a personal level, because I've always taught my children and raising my kids that there's no such thing as a bad word. It's how you use the words and the reaction that you get. And I can hear myself, I mean, I can hear Frank Zappa in my teaching to my kids by going back and listening to these old interviews where he says, they're just words. They're just words.
What is the function of government, Frank? The civil government? Isn't it to, in part, promote general welfare and to help protect families?
Do you think that you're protecting somebody by taking away seven words?
It's not just words.
It is words. It's about words.
Words also connote ideas, Mr. Zappa. Are you for songs that portray incest as just another kind of sex and perhaps even preferable sex? Are you for that?
Would you ban the mention of the incestual activities? Would you?
Well, why don't we make a pact?
Then why don't you better take a look at the Bible and see what's in there, what happens after Sodom and Gomorrah.
The Bible does not advocate incest.
But
it condemns it, Frank.
It mentions it.
We're talking about advocacy, Mr. Zappa.
No, we're not. We're talking about words.
No, we're not
talking about
just words.
We're talking about content of the words.
Oh, you don't think words connote ideas, huh?
Yes, they can be assembled into sentences and get ideas.
Well, how about answering my question about incest? Do you support records that promote incest as just another kind of sex, or in some instances it might even be preferable? Do you agree with
that? No, I don't agree with it. I have no interest in incest, but I don't think that anybody in his right mind would desire to have the government step in to make sure that they install a censor board that keeps certain things from being said.
Senator Hollings?
I've had the opportunity to attend a showing, you might say, a presentation of this porn rock, as they call it, in the test of pornography. One of the things to look at is that it does not have any redeeming social value. They could be an exception here because, having attended that presentation, the redeeming social value, I find that it's inaudible. I have a hard time understanding it. And Paul, since I traveled the country for 3 years and they said they couldn't understand me, maybe I could make a good rock star. I don't know. But in all candor, I would tell you it's outrageous filth. So I'll be looking from this senator's standpoint, not just to bring pressures, but to try to see if there is some constitutional provisions, a tax, or approach that can be used on the Congress to limit this outrageous filth.
Senator Tribble.
Rape, incest, is outrageous filth.
The effects of such filth like sandpaper towels may not be
adequate.
Emotional damage is more
disconcerting.
I've had similar, you know, discussions with my kids, who, by the way, became Zappa fans at an early age, because I used to play this stuff around the house when they were little and during their most formidable years. I hope I haven't emotionally, you know, or intellectually scarred them. But, you know, I think to your point, Zappa was never politically correct. You know, he liked shaking the establishment. The whole, you know, he went off on all the stuff with Tipper Gore back in that time frame about, you know, censorship and political correctness. So, you know, no doubt he was politically savvy. And, you know, I think he had a forum or a stage at that point, you know, to be able to get the airtime, you know, on these Crossfire TV shows or any other, because he had achieved some fame by then. But, you know, hard to say whether, you know, which preceded the other, the music or the activism and the very, you know, the very strong, strongly polarizing force that he became later on.
Today, where some of this material is very accessible off the vinyl through podcasts or whatever, through the digital format, I wonder how many people of the younger generation are discovering Zappa and other musicians in his class. You know, how many are discovering them today? Whether or not the technology, you know, is helping people rediscover. I would imagine his records are still being sold at some relatively good clip, in part because his son has sort of taken the mantle and goes on these tours, Dweezil doing Zappa.
Well, you know, it's a good question. I don't honestly know. Hopefully there are other parents like you and I who, you know, turned our kids onto Frank Zappa, who in turn, you know, turned their friends and contemporaries onto Zappa. I think... it's hard to say. While the technology has made his music a lot more accessible, it's similarly made a lot other music and musicians more accessible. And it's really hard to imagine how somebody today, with all the stuff that's on YouTube and iTunes, could break through. I really wonder about that. I can only hope it's happening. I know they keep releasing new albums. I was on the iTunes store earlier this morning, and I couldn't believe how many Zappa albums there are. There are about 50 of them now. You know, between the original bootlegs and reissues and compilations and recompilations, I just could not believe how much fresh material, or at least freshly repackaged material, is out there. But I wonder how you break through, because if he wasn't commercial in his day, in his prime time, it's hard to imagine him being more so today. I can only speculate, but I imagine if Frank was around today, he would really embrace kind of the democratization, I guess, of musicians, you know, having greater access and fewer channel restrictions to reaching their audiences. I'll bet he would really embrace what's going on, and it would probably find, you know, provide a whole new fodder for him, you know, for a new social commentary, no doubt, with all the stuff that's getting played on YouTube and whatnot. I wonder what Frank would say about all the cat videos on YouTube.
I'm sure there'd be a song in there for him. No, I agree with you. You know, back in the day when he testified before Congress and about the Parents Music Resource Association and censorship,
that was
one generation. Today he'd be on the Hill talking about net neutrality. I think. I mean, I think he really understood and he had a great perception of what was important, what was on the cutting edge, and what really was important.
I agree, and so yet, you know, as we started off the conversation, there's this dilemma, and it's a fun dilemma to talk about. You know, was his legacy more around the social awareness or around the music? It's a great debate. I think you win on both sides.
David Nash is a vice president, product marketing for the ADP Corporation, and my roommate in college, 30 years ago. But don't let the fancy title fool you. He'd much rather be playing guitar solos in his living room in Beaverton, Oregon. You're listening to Thickly Settled, a radio program about civilization and citizenship. Thickly Settled, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love My Neighbor. It's impossible here to capture the full range of a musician's career. To continue your explorations, try the official Zappa family website at zappa.com. We'll close our tribute with this clip from the 1993 interview on the Today Show with correspondent Jamie Gangel.
Let me go through a list of words that whenever you read about Frank Zappa, you hear, and tell me how they strike you. Rock legend.
It's pathetic.
Test pilot pushing the edge.
That's...
Don't you like that one a little bit?
No.
No?
No. It's a little bit too... We got that military aroma to it.
Eccentric genius?
Eccentric, yes. Genius, maybe.
Funny guy.
Only to a few.
Here's the question, you'll know exactly what it is, and that is, how does Frank Zappa want to be remembered?
Well, it's not important.
Not important at all?
Mm-mm.
Want to be remembered for the music?
It's not important to even be remembered. I mean, the people who worry about being remembered are guys like Reagan, Bush. These people want to be remembered, and they'll spend a lot of money and do a lot of work to make sure that remembrance is just terrific.
And for Frank Zappa?
I don't care.
Thickly Settled is a production of IBIS Radio, the independent broadcast information service, in cooperation with WMBR-FM in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and openmediaboston.org. Our interim website is located at www.ibisradio.org/thicklysettled. Financial support for this program comes from the Trailer Park Foundation and Oscar's All Night Kosher Deli and Muffler Shop, serving knishes and carburetors since 1981. For Thickly Settled, I'm Dave Goodman. Thanks for listening.